Okay, we're beginning on the bottom of Mem Tet Amud Bet on the last line. The Gemara here is discussing this statement that Rava brought from Rav Nachman that he had a Mesorah about Chimtza and Bar Chimtza. One of them was considered to be Satim, successful at sealing up a hole. One of them was unsuccessful at sealing up a hole. We already saw earlier that also is related to whether the fats are kasher or not kasher. I mean, if they're tahor fats, then they are successful at covering up. If they are tamei fats, they are not successful. Rava says he doesn't know which is which. And then we have Rav Huna Bar Chinina and Rav Huna Bar Eid, Rav Nachman tell us that the Bar Chimtza is Satim. Bar Chimtza is successful at sealing it up. Chimtza lo Satim. And Chimtza is not successful. And then Amarav Tavot, Simanech, the Siman to remember it is Yafek Koach HaBen Mikoach HaAv, which is a quote from a Mishnah in Shavuot in an unrelated matter, but there it uses that phrase, and we're borrowing the phrase to say, sometimes the son does better than the father. Now the Gemara wants to know, hey Chimtza, hey Bar Chimtza. Right now you established that Bar Chimtza is successful at sealing it up. Chimtza is not successful. What are these items? What are these fats? Now obviously we're in the context of speaking about the Zekerev, those parts of the digestive system. And over here in particular we're speaking about the Keba. It's the abomasum that sits at the end of the digestive system before it goes into the small intestines. What's important about the Keba is that it is shaped like a crescent. Tashma, Damar Rav Nachman, Inhu Mechal Achle, Olididan Mistam Lomli Sotim? He says, they eat it, and we're not going to say that at least it's able to seal up a hole. So what he's pointing out is that there's a difference in the halacha between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. And that in Eretz Yisrael, they're eating these fats, and in Bavel, they're not eating the fats. So he says, okay, if they're eating it in Eretz Yisrael, that clearly means that they think these are fats that are shuman, not chelev, that they are mutar to eat. So we don't eat it. Fine. But at least we should then give it a standard that it seals up a hole. Because kosher fats seal up a hole. So we won't eat it, but at least we should allow it to seal up a hole. So now, the Gemara explains. Da'akashto, from the word keshet, from the word bow, because, again, the shape of the keba is like a crescent. So the akashto kule alma lo pligi dasir. Everybody says that that is asur. Ki pligi, where they argue is dayatra, and the part that is the inner part of the crescent. So here the keba has fats on both sides of the crescent. Everybody agrees the fats on the outside are problematic. The question is about the fats on the inside of the crescent of the keba. The reason being is the definition that we said before about fats that are tamei. Rabbi Kiva gave the definition, totav, that if it sits on top, and then it is krum v'niklach, that's considered to be fats that are tamei, and Rashi points out over here, that the fats on the outer side of the crescent, they are only attached in one location, in the middle. The rest of the fat basically rides on top of the keba. It's only one point where it's attached. So he calls that totav. It's really not integrally attached to the organ itself. It rides on top of the organ, except for that one piece in the middle, and that's not enough to consider it to be fats that are tahor, and therefore the entire outer crescent is tameh. In the internal crescent, that's where they have a machloka between Bnei Eretz Yisrael and Bnei Bavel. Bnei Bavel hold like Rabbi Yishmael, that says that anything that's krum v'nilchaf, anything that is like a layer and can be peeled off, is chelev tameh. And that fat on the inner part of the crescent also has that same feature, and that's why they don't eat it in Bavel. Those that live in Eretz Yisrael follow the sheet of Rabbi Akiva, who says it has to also be totav, krum v'niklaf, and that's not totav. The outer fats are totav. They sit on top of the organ and only attached in one place. The inner fats are attached much more integrally to the organ, and therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, that is fat that is tahor, not tamei. Everybody would agree about the outer fats that they are tamei. So the machloket Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva would be about the inner fats, and that helps us to understand about which Rav Nachman said, they eat it, at least for us, it should plug the hole. Which means that the Bar Chimtza is a reference to the inner part of the crescent, because that's the part where he suggests it will seal up the hole, is on the inner part of the crescent. The part that's the Chimtza is the outer part of the crescent, where everybody agrees those are fats that are tamei, and therefore they can't seal up the hole. Ike d'amre. We have a second version of this. Deatra kuli hamalo plige deshari. Everybody agrees about the fats on the inner part of the crescent that they are mutar. Ki plige dakashto. Where they argue is about the fats on the outer side of the crescent. Rashi points out then that this would all be like Rabbi Akiva, that everybody would say that the inner fats are mutar like Rabbi Akiva, because the inner fats are integrally attached to the organ, and therefore they don't totav, they don't sit on top of it, and for that reason it's going to be mutar. Where they argue is akashto, on the fats on the outer side, and their machloket is whether that attachment in the middle makes it attached, or does it make it totav that it's sitting outside? The one who says it's mutar is because it's not like the chelib tameh, because it's not totav, it's not riding atop, it's attached in one location. And that's enough to make it that it is tahor. On the other hand, those that say that it is tameh are like what we said before, which is that the fact that it is attached doesn't ruin the totav. And since it's sitting on top, except for that one location, it's floating on top of the organ, that's considered to be asur. Those are the two lashonot. Now, Rashi says that only the first lashon works according to what Rav Nachman said. And he said, the Rav Nachman alishna kamo. Rav Nachman's statement is only about the first version we had, because in the first version we have fats that are mutar, and then we have fats that are asurim. So the ones that are mutar in Eretz Yisrael were the internal fats. There, Rav Nachman says about those, even if we don't eat them, at least they should stop up a hole there. That's the bar chimtza. The fats on the outside are the chimtza. On the other hand, Rashi says in the Lishna Batra or the Ikad de Amre, we can't make Rav Nachman fit into the Lishna Batra, because there, in Eretz Yisrael, they eat both sides. They eat the inner side and the outer side according to the Lishna Batra. And in Bavel, they ate one side. So then, about what was Rav Nachman's statement made? Rav Nachman says, they eat it. For us, at least it should be Tahor, which means that it's a place that they didn't eat. Well, if they didn't eat, that was the outer side that they didn't eat, but they did eat the inner side. So which one's the bar chimtza now? One side's tahor, and the other side is tahor in Eretz Yisrael. They're both bar chimtza, you have no chimtza. That's what Rashi says, and therefore he says, Rav Nachman's statement was about the first lashon, and then Rashi says, v'hochi mistavra k'lishna kamo. And he says, I think that the lishna kamo makes sense, based on a gemara in Psachim, and it's going to again play out a little bit over here, which is in Makom Shenagu. Makom Shenagu is a parak about people who have certain minhagim, and then they go to a different location. Over there, there's a story about Rabbi Bar Chana that came and ate a yatra. He was eating the inner part of the fats, and Rav Avya covered up his head, refused to look at him when he was eating that part of it. That's because in Bavel, they didn't eat that part. In Eretz Yisrael, they did. So Rabbi Bar Chana was the Talmid of Yochanan and spent a lot of time in Eretz Yisrael, came to Bavel, and he's eating it. So Rav Avya looks away from him because he doesn't approve. He's not supposed to be eating it. So you see there that that was the difference between B'nai Bavel and B'nai Eretz Yisrael, was the Ayatra, was the inner part of the fats, not the external part of the crescent, but rather the internal crescent. So Rashi sees that as corroborating the first version of the Lashon. And then he says, Oli Zidan Tarvayu Asire. For us, both sides of the fats are Asur, both the inner part and the outer part of the crescent. The Batar B'nai Bavel Garinan. It's an important statement in general that we follow the Talmud Bavli, that we who are in the Galut, our halacha is determined by the Talmud Bavli, and therefore whatever they did in Bavel, even though we don't live in Bavel, that's going to govern over here. And in Bavel, they didn't eat either side of the fat, so we're not going to eat it either. Dana b'nei Gola anan, because we are in the Gola, and therefore we're determined by the Talmud Bavli. Ulek lishna kama ulek chumra. Therefore, we're going to go according to the first lashon and the chumra. The cho'echa de'ika trei lishne b'gemara. Whenever you have two lishonot in the Gemara, imide doraitahu, if it's mina Torah, which is the din here, chileb tameh, chileb tahor is a din doraita, zil lachumra, you go to whichever one is the chumra. So here, the first lashon is the chumra, and we're gonna go follow that lashon lachumra. Ubi derabonon, zil batar batro. He says, whenever it comes to a din derabonon, then you follow the latter of the two lishonot, not the chumra lakula, you go after the second lashon no matter what. There is a machloket we've seen before where the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with his grandfather Rashi and says when it's a derabonon, we go the kula. Meaning that the two lishonot, when you have a doraita, you go the chumra. When you have a derabonon, you go the kula. And the Tosfot over there also brings a third daya as to how to deal with when you have multiple lishonot, or you have an ikadamre. Rashi makes it clear here that we go the chumra, and he also makes it clear that Rav Nachman's statement could only be fit into the first lashon, not the second lashon. Balei HaTosafot disagree and say that Rav Nachman could even fit into the second Lashon. He says you just have to reread the statement of Rav Nachman. The way that we read Rav Nachman's statement is, Inu Meichel Achle, they eat it. We're going to say that it doesn't seal it up. He said it as a rhetorical question, which implies that they best should seal it up. If you read Rav Nachman's statement as a statement instead of as a rhetorical question, then it would actually fit into the second Lashon, where he says, Inu Michla Achle, they eat it. For us, it doesn't even seal it up. So he's making a statement. He's not making it as a rhetorical question. He's saying the fact that they eat, we think doesn't seal up anything. The inner fats, we both eat. And so the inner fats are the bar chimtza. That's the stuff that is satin. The outer fats, they eat it. We think it doesn't even seal up a hole. So he's making a statement of fact, and then the chimtza will be the outer fats. So Tosafot figures out a way to make Rav Nachman fit even according to the second Lashon. By just having Rav Nachman be a statement rather than a rhetorical question, then you can have Rav Nachman fit into the Igad Amrei, not just into Lishna Makama. According to Rashi, where you always read it as a bitmia, as a rhetorical question, it can only fit into the Lishna Kama, and Tosafot agrees with that. He just says, who says you have to read it as a rhetorical question? You read it as a statement of fact, then even in the Lishna Batra, the Bar Chimtza will be the internal fats, because the Bnei Bavel ate those, and the external fats will be the Chimtza, because the Bnei Bavel didn't eat them, and it wasn't so tame, even though the Bnei Tzo did eat them, because Rav Nachman says, they eat it, we think it's tame, and it's not so tame at all. Those are the two versions of this. And again, Rashi and Tosafot argue about whether the second Lashon could fit in to explain what Rav Nachman was saying. Now the Gemara says, Kiha, Dama Rav Avyo. The Gemara says, Kiha, Rashi says, going back on the Lishna Kama, it's similar to what Rav Avyo, Amar Rav Yami, Mikamtsim, that you have to slice off a piece. V'chein Amar Rav Yanai, Mishum Zaken Echad, Mikamtsim. You have to slice off a piece at the top. Rashi over here explains the issue, which is, these are all individuals who from Eretz Yisrael. So according to the Lishna Kama, everybody agrees the outer crescent is asur. The only question was the internal crescent asur? In Eretz Yisrael, they thought it was mutar. So Rashi says, according to these Amoraim, who are from Eretz Yisrael, they eat the internal fats of the internal part of the crescent. The problem is that the crescent has two parts of fats to it. It has fat that sits on the crescent itself, that's part of the kebab. But it also has a portion of the fat that's mechaseh tekeret. That's what we spoke about yesterday. The sac that encloses all of the digestive system, that fat is clearly fat that's tameh. And then there's a connection between that fat that's covering and the fat on the kebab, and you have to separate them away. The only way to do that is to take the top layer of fat off of that of the kebab in order to separate away a chelev mechaseh tekeret from the chelev kebab, which is mutar. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here, that they were mikamtsin. They used to slice it. And Rashi says over here, notli ma'at ma'at mamalo. They take a little bit off the top surface of the inner part of the crescent. Because the chelev of the kerev sits right on there. They're attached. And you can't eat the chelev of kerev. So what you want to do is slice off that top layer, which is associated with the chelev of kerev. And then the remainder, which is associated with the kebab, you can eat. This was the practice of these Amoraim from Eretz Yisrael. Amar Rav Avya, have a kamina kamei de Rabbi Ami. I was in front of Rabbi Ami. Come to, they sliced off the top part of the fat. Bahabule, and they brought it to him. Bachal, and he ate it, meaning like the practice of Bnei Eretz Yisrael. Shamei de Rabbi Chanina, the servant, the shamish of Rabbi Chanina, have a kai kamei de Rabbi Chanina. He was standing in front of Rabbi Chanina. Amalei kamots, habule dechol. He says, why don't you slice off a top of the fat from the kebab and bring me some to eat? I want to eat now. Can you please prepare it for me? Chazia dehave ke mach seim. So we saw that he was hesitant. Rashi says it comes from the word lo tachsom shor v'disho. Don't muzzle a shor when it's going out to thresh. So that means to hold back, to cause some sort of reticence in what you're doing. And same thing over here. He was a little bit reticent about going and doing this. Amarlei, so Rabbi Chanina figures it out. He says, Bavlaat, oh, you are from Bavel, gom shadi, cut it out completely and throw it away. Because he realized that he was from Bavel and his practice was different than the practice of Eretz Yisrael. And he saw his shamish hesitating. The reason he was hesitating was because in Bavel they didn't eat any of that fat on the inner crescent. Rabbi Chanina was in Eretz Yisrael, like the practice of Eretz Yisrael, saying, slice off the top and give me the rest of the fat. He sees him hesitating, says, you must be from Bavel. Your minhag is like Bavel, so then you should cut the whole fat off and throw it away because you don't eat any of that fat. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Bnei Ma'ayin Shinikvu, if the intestines are punctured, Velecha Sot Matan, and there is some sort of liquid that seals them up, Ksheira, they are okay. So now the Gemara asks, my lecha, what exactly are you speaking about over here when you're speaking about this liquid that seals them up? Amar Rav Kahana, Shirka de Mayo. It is the viscous liquid that sits in the lining of the intestines, the Nafik Agav Duchaka, that it can be pressed out or can leave the intestines under pressure. So what we're speaking about here is a very viscous liquid that sits in the intestine. And therefore, if it plugs the hole that's there, it is a serious plug. It's not going anywhere. It's viscous enough that it's not just going to flow out or it's just going to go away. It's able to plug the hole and stay there, and it will only get pushed out if you put a lot of pressure on it. But otherwise, it'll stay in place. That's what he's suggesting over here, that this is efficacious in plugging a hole in the intestines. And we know already that the B'nai Ma'ayin, even a Nekev Mashahu, is a Treifa. So this will solve that problem, and you won't have a Nekev Mashahu if this is sealing it up. So now, Gemirei Chavraya de Rabbi Abba mi Rabbi Abba. So the friends or peers of Rabbi Abba learned from Rabbi Abba, Umanu Rabbi Zeira. And who are those friends? Who's this individual? Rabbi Zeira. Vamilach Chavraya de Rabbi Zeira mi Rabbi Zeira. Some say it was the peers of Rabbi Zeira who learned from Rabbi Zeira. Umanu. And who is that? Rabbi Abba. So that would just be the story in reverse. Question is, was Rabbi Zeira teaching Rabbi Abba or Rabbi Abba teaching Rabbi Zeira? Some Rabbi Abba braid to Rabbi Chir bar Abba. Hachi Amar, Rabbi Chir bar Abba. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Alocha to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel b'Treifa. So one of them said over in the name of Rabbi Abba, braid to Rabbi Chir bar Abba, who said in the name of his father the following memra from Rabbi Yochanan. Now, as Rashi points out, the Rabbi Abba over here that they're quoting is not the Rabbi Abba in the story before. That's Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Zeira, who are peers. One of them is teaching the other one the statement from this other Rabbi Abba. In Shreifot, the Locha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The Locha is like Rabbi Shimon ba'Avel. And the Locha is like Rabbi Shimon when it comes to Avelut. The Locha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel b'Treifa. The Locha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel b'Treifa. Hadamran. That's the case that we just brought over here, which is that if the B'nai Ma'ayim, if the intestines are plugged by this mucus, viscous liquid that's there, that's fine, and it's not a treifa. Ki Rabbi Shimon ba'Avel mahi. That misora that you have, that the loch is like Rabbi Shimon ba'Avelut, what did Rabbi Shimon say, that you're saying the loch is like Rabbi Shimon and Avelut? The Tanya, we have a Braita and Moed Katan. Ko shlosha yamim arishonim. In the first 3 days of Avelut, Bame Makom Karov, he comes from a place that is close by, which just means that he had the possibility of getting the information on the first day of the Avelut, because he lives within a one-day radius of where the death happened and where they're sitting Shiva. So he's one of the Avelim. It just, he wasn't informed. You know, today we don't think about this problem because of the modern day communications. When someone passes away, then at most it's 24 hours before someone finds out, because it might be Shabbat, it might be something intervening. But other than that, everybody finds out the information pretty quickly. In their time, if you didn't live in proximity to wherever the person that passed away, there's a distinct possibility that you wouldn't know about the death. Even of a relative that you're supposed to sit Shiva on, you may not know during the Shiva, maybe the Shloshim, maybe not even for a year. It depends on how far away you are and how many people traverse that area between where you are and where the Avelut is. So over here you have a situation in which the individual didn't find out about it at the day of the death. He wasn't there for the burial, and he wasn't even there for the first couple of days of Avelut. He shows up, or he finds out the information, and he shows up within the first 3 days of Avelut. If it was possible for him to garner the information, because he lives within a day's distance of where they're sitting Avelut, Monei Imahem, then he continues to count with them. Meaning that the Shiva is determined by those that started the Shiva, and he picks up Shiva on the third day. He doesn't count from the beginning and start Shiva from then. He starts as if he's part of their count, and he begins on the third day of Shiva. In Makom Rachok, if he comes from a more distant place, Monei La'atzmo, if he comes from a further away place where he couldn't have gotten the information anyway, it would never have gotten to him, then whenever he shows up, he starts the Avelut at that point in time, he begins his own count of Shiva, distinct from those that are already sitting Avelut. So his Shiva will go on beyond those that are currently sitting Shiva. Mikan ve'elech, after the first 3 days, afilu ba mimakom karov moneh la'atzmo. You already come past the third day, then you start your own Shiva, somewhat along the lines of Rove. First of all, the Avelut shifts the first 3 days to the second part of the Shiva, and the Gemara talks about the gradations of Shiva. And again, the first day is the most chamor. The first 3 days have certain aspects to them. And then after the first 3 days, there's a change in the tone of the Shiva. It lightens up a little bit, maybe not discernibly, but at least halachically, there are some things that change. And the Shiva, if you show up after those first 3 days, we want you to go through the whole process of Shiva. You're going to miss the robe of Shiva, of sitting the Shiva in this way. And so therefore we say, even if you come from a Makom HaKarov, you do your own count, you have your own Shiva. Shimon Omer, afilu biyom ha-shvi'i, b'makom karov, moneh imahem. Shimon says that if you show up on the seventh day, then you'd sit with them for whatever that is on the seventh day, and you're done. So anytime you show up during the Shiva, if you were in a makom karov, you were in a day's journey away from where they were, and then you show up, if you show up, you count with them on the seventh day, and you're done. You have 1 day of Shiva, or half a day of Shiva, whatever it is on the seventh day, and you're done. He's bound by the count of the existing Shiva. And since he got in under the wire while they were still sitting Shiva, he just finishes up with them and he's Yotze, quote unquote, with their Shiva, and he doesn't really have a Shiva. Now, the interesting thing about this is Tosfot points out, it's a little difficult to understand what's the exact scenario over here. Because Tosfot says, the Choraya Nira, Diyom Shvi, Labdavka. Can't be during the seventh day. On the seventh day, we say, Mixatayom Kekulo. You don't sit Avelut. You don't sit Shiva on the seventh day. Once the morning comes, you get up from sitting Shiva and you're done. So he thinks maybe it's not Yom meaning daytime. Yom HaShvi means the 24-hour period. And Ela B'Laila Shel Shvi, it means that you came at night on the seventh. And that's why you can sit Avelut with them, or you have a little bit of Dakati Lo Posuk Avelut Minayu. Since they still have a din of Avelut. Dibi Yom HaShvi, because if it was on the seventh day, HaMitzat Hayom Kikulo. Because if he came on the day of the seventh, Mitzat Hayom Kikulo, they'd be done with Avelut. And once they're done with the Avelut, it can't be that he counts his Shiva when they're done with Avelut. How can you say he's counting with them if they're done with their Avelut and he's just starting over here? It can't be that. Umil. So now he comes up with a little tight shear, which is Afilu biyom ha-shvi mamash. Maybe even on the seventh day itself. I read the B'moed Katan Mukila Kishadayna Minachamim Etzlo. In a case where the mourner is still sitting Shiva on the seventh in the morning. Sometimes in the morning of the seventh, it goes on a little bit because people come to be Menachem Avel. As long as they come to be Menachem Avel, he's still in Shiva until he gets up from the Avelut. Dakati kai bevelutei achil chulahem. Until the Menachemim, those that are coming to comfort the mourner, leave, he's still considered like an Avel because they're still treating him like an Avel, and he stays in Avelut till they leave, and then he gets up from his Avelut. So he says, as long as on that morning there's still Avelut taking place, maybe that's enough to allow you to join the Shiva. Now that's very interesting because we've discussed this before. When it comes to Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo, we saw this also by Ruvo Kekulo, what does that mean? Does that mean that Mitzvot Kekulo, when you go into the seventh day, a little bit is enough? And that means once you've finished up that Mitzvot, there's no reason to do the rest of the Kulo because you're done already. You did Mitzvot Kekulo, and there's no reason to have a Veilut after that because you've discharged your obligation. It might be that whatever you do afterwards is not even called Avelut. Or do you say Mikta Yom Kekulo is a dispensation? You could do the whole day of Avelut, but if you happen to decide to finish up early, we'll count it as if you did the whole thing. So that Chakira is really being played out here in the Tosafot. Tosafot says, first of all, once you have Mikta Yom Kekulo, does Avelut exist afterwards? That's the first part. And Tosafot in the end says, maybe you can have Avelut if you continue to sit with people coming to comfort. You can extend the Avelut, even Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo is passed. The second thing that Tosfot says is once you get up, then it's over, and you can't classify the remainder of the day as a din of Avelut. That could be for a number of reasons, but it's also possible that he thinks that once you get up and you terminate the Avelut, you can't have Avelut for the rest of the day. You're not considered an Avel for the remainder of the day. I mean, that's clear, because you're not in Avelut anymore. But the Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo makes it so much so, that whatever is the remainder of the day is not classified as Avelut, as if you did Avelut, because when someone shows up, they don't get to connect to your Avelut. Your Avelut is so over that you have no ability to connect to it. You see, actually, the Chakira in both directions here. and you can apply it to the different stages in Tosafot in both ways. Just interesting to note here about the Mikzvah Tayom, Kekulo, that implication. Amar Mandahu. Someone said, so you're saying, Rashi notes, that when they put the Gemara together, they forgot who this person was. So they say, Mandu, somebody said, Iske v'esik, I hope to merit to go up there to Israel, v'gamra l'shmaitet amipume demoro. And I'm going to hear this memra directly from the person who gave it over. Yisalik ashkafei, when this Talmid, who we don't know who he is, went up there to Israel, ashkafei the Rabbi Abba brei the Rabbi Chia bar Abba. He finds the Bala Memra. So whoever this Talmid is, we don't know, finds the Bala Memra. Amar Mar, halacha k'Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel b'treifa. So he asked the first question. Did you say the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel b'treifa? Amalei, ha, ein halacha amre. So that's not what I said. I said halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Same day we've had this, where they have a mesorah from someone saying the halacha is like. So when they go check with him, he says just the opposite. K'Rabbi Shimon ve'avel mai. What about the fact that you said the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon in Avelut? Amalei, plugta ninhu. It is a machloket to Itmar, because you have a machloket amaraim. Rav Chista amar halacha. Rav Chista says the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. V'chein amar Rabbi Yochanan halacha. And Rabbi Yochanan also says the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. V'Rav Nachman amar ein halacha. The other hand, Rav Nachman says the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon. So the stam of the Gemara concluding, V'ein halacha k'Rabbi Shimon Gamliel b'treifa. The halacha is not like Rabbi Gamliel in treifa. Because here we went back to the Bala Memra, who we claim said that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. And he said, I never said that. Now, there's no evidence of the fact that we should be making it like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. V'alocha k'Rabbi Shimon ba'avel. And even though it's a machloket by Avelut, the halacha is still like Rabbi Shimon ba'avelut. Damar Shmuel, so this is an important principle that is invoked, halacha k'divrei ha'mekil ba'avel. The halacha is always like the one who's making in Avelut. The question of why the halacha is k'divrei ha'mekil ba'avelut, is that because Avelut is derabonon? And since Avelut is derabonon, we always say, Din derabonon is the kula, and so therefore the halacha is k'divrei ha'mekil ba'avel. That's what Shmuel is saying. Or is Shmuel saying this irrespective of whether it's a din d'oraita or a din derabonon? Because there are rishonim and geonim who believe that avelut, at least on the first day, is d'oraita. Is there a rare opinion that all of avelut is d'oraita? But mostly it's just on the first day of avelut d'oraita. Would we invoke the principle of Shmuel then, even though it's d'oraita? And the Ramban in this Torah Adam discusses that the possibility that we, in general, halacha divrei ha'mekil ba'avel might derive from the fact that we try to reduce the amount of avelut that's out there. Again, he's speaking to a reality in which death is happening all the time, in that the infant mortality rate is so high, people pass away all the time, so people are looking for some light, some hope in their time. They want some simcha, and therefore we try to reduce the amount of avelut that's out there just because there's so much avelut. Baruch Hashem, today, with the modern era, these things happen much less often, even though we still paskin to give a mikvah b'avel, but that's a description that the Ramban gives about the circumstances in which they lived. Amarav Shimi Bachia. Mekifim b'bnei me'ayim. So now we have something that we said before you weren't allowed to do in certain circumstances. Now we're finding circumstances where you're allowed to do this. The Gemara before said, b'ein mekifim b'bo'ot. You're not allowed to compare different types of blisters or types of growths that happen on the lungs because they can't be compared. Over here, we're saying that when it comes to b'nei me'ayin, when it comes to the intestines, you can compare an intestine, which is that if you have a hole in the intestine and you want to know whether the hole happened after the shechita or before the shechita, what you can do is puncture a hole in the intestines nearby and then look and let's see if it looks the same or if it looks different. And from that, you can determine whether it happened after shechita or before shechita. So that's what it means. Mekifim means you bring them close together. You do a comparison between them. So mekifim b'bnei me'ayim. Hanu b'nei me'ayim datu l'kemei d'rova. So there were these intestines that came before Rava that had a hole in them. Akfinu v'lo idmu. He punctured another hole in them or another set of intestines. He punched a hole and it didn't look similar. So he wanted to make it into a treifa. Ata Rav Misharshi Abrei. So Rava's son, Rav Misharshi, shows up. Memashmesh behu v'idmu. He rubbed his finger over it. He handled it. And all of a sudden, the new hole looked like the other hole. And it was going to be kasher. Amalei min halacha. How do you know to do that? What possessed you to do such a thing? Samalei, kama yode, memash mishu bahane, mikame delete, likame demar. He says to his father, nobody told me this. Logically, I thought, how many people have handled these intestines before they got to Rova to take a look at them and determine whether they're a treifa or not? They've been handled by numerous people. So if you want to compare intestines and the hole in the intestine, you have to simulate the situation that is true of the hole that exists with a new hole. You just punctured a new hole. Of course, it's not going to look like a hole that was there. Even after Shechita, if 15 people handled it and touched it, it's going to rub down. It's going to have a different look to it. So I simulated the effect of other people handling it, and all of a sudden it looks the same. So logically, it makes sense to do that. Samalei, so he says to his son or to those that were gathered, Chakam bri b'treifot, my son is brilliant in treifot, ki Rabbi Yochanan. Like Rabbi Yochanan, again, we saw this earlier back on Chachetim and Bet. There Rashi brought two interpretations, he brings them over here as well. Either it means that he's as bright as Rabbi Yochanan in treifot, because Rabbi Yochanan was known as a bucky in treifot, or it means he's a chakim like Rabbi Yochanan in general. Rabbi Yochanan in halacha in general is a huge Talmud Chacham. My son in treifot is equal to Rabbi Yochanan, who has that standing in general. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar, Damrei Torfayu. Now we have other Amoraim speaking about this ability to compare. They say, Mekifim Bereya. You're allowed to compare different treifot in a lung. Meaning that if you have a hole in the lung or something in the lung that can't be attributed to the handling of the butcher, then you're allowed to compare it to another one that is made in that lung to see if it is similar in nature. Amarava bo amran el boto aruga. That's only true if you're on the same, loosely translate aruga here as lobe, but it's really a little different than that. Abo me aruga la aruga bo. But from one to the other, you can't do this. And as Rashi describes over here, aruga does not necessarily mean a single lobe. It means the right side of the lung and the left side of the lung. And you can only compare right side and left side to left side. You can't go from right to left. They have different features to them, different consistencies to them. And therefore, you can't compare one to the other. So that's what it means, that you can't go mi aruga le aruga. Ve'ilchotot, the Stamat Gemara says, aloha is afilu mi aruga le aruga. That's not a problem. If you move from right to left side, that's not a problem either. Midaka le daka, umigasa le gasa. That's only true if you go from a daka to a daka, or a gasa to a gasa. We'll explain in one second. Below mi gasa le daka, below mi daka le gasa. But not going in between those differences. Rashi brings two interpretations. One interpretation, he says, is it's a reference to the size of the animal, which is that you can compare animals of a similar size. So we do allow you to compare aruga da aruga, which means from one side of the lung to the other side of the lung. In addition, we allow you then to compare between an aze and a seh. A goat and a sheep will let you compare between them because they're both behemoth dakot. What we won't let you do is compare between a goat and a cow. The cow's lungs are different than the goat's lungs, and we won't allow you to go from a daka to a gasa or vice versa, but from a cow to a cow, we'll let you compare. So that would be the way you read it. Gasa to gasa means same size animal, because it makes sense to compare things of a similar size. And so gasa to gasa works, daka to daka works. You can't go daka to gasa or gasa to gaka. That's the simplest reading of the Gemara. Rashi then brings the second interpretation, which he favors heavily, and says, daka to gasa is about the size of the lobes that are there. Daka refers to the onot, which are the smaller lobes on the top, and the gasa refers to the umot, which are the two big lobes that sit at the bottom of the lungs. So you compare uma to uma, but you can't compare it from an uma to an ona, or an ona to an uma, or onot to onot, you can't compare. So that's what Rashi suggests over here as daka and gasa, and he says that, zot nira li, says, I think that explanation makes a lot more sense, shame mikilin kolkach, because otherwise it's a huge kula. Not only can you compare on the same lungs themselves, you can compare to another animal that's in the same genre of animals. You can compare the lungs. He said that's way too big a kula. And I think that even within a pair of lungs, you have to differentiate within the lung itself, between the umot and the onot. He says that that makes much more sense to me. So Rashi heavily favors his second interpretation. The Balei Tosafot quote from the Rabbeinu Chananah, who says just the opposite. And he says, Mistama, mibeima daka, mibeima daka, lakel. Says the language doesn't support what Rashi says. Daka and gasa are terminologies that are used with animals. It's in the Gemara, in the Mishnah. Whenever they say daka and gasa, they're referencing to small animals and large animals. They're not referencing to different parts of the lungs. When you speak about the lungs themselves, you would use a word like gdola and ktana, large lobes, small lobes. You wouldn't use a lashon of daka and gasa. And for that reason, the Rabbeinu Chananel clearly favors the first interpretation that Rashi brings, and Tosafot is obviously doing this in contrast to what Rashi says, because Rashi favors the second interpretation, the Balei Tosfot say the language doesn't support the way that you're reading the Gemara. Abaye v'Rova damrei tarvayu makifim b'kaneh. You can compare trachea. So Rashi over here explains that makifim b'kaneh im nimsa psuka lachar zman ok durak isar. If after some time you find that it was either sliced, meaning that it was cut along the circumference of the kaneh, where the din there is berov, or you have a cutout on the side of the kaneh, where it's the size of isar, in order to be a treifa. So if you have either one of those, then you can compare them. Rashi says, ba'achar zman. It was after some time. The reason Rashi likely says ba'achar zman is because if you find it that way immediately after shechita, then the animal is all likelihood of treifa. There's no reason to believe that the kaneh was cut for some reason after the shechita when you just did the shechita. After a period of time where it was handled and things happened and the knife was cutting up the animal, over there you could think about the possibility that this happened post-shechita. Therefore, Rashi says, lachar zman. So after some time, where there's a possibility that this could have happened, we allow you to compare trachea. Amram, amara papa, lo amran, ela ba'oto chulia. That is only true if it's in the same cartilaginous ring, as long as it's on the same tracheal ring, avame chulia lo chulia lo. But from one ring to another ring, we wouldn't allow. Now Rashi, first of all, explains chulia here like he did before. You remember Rashi said the word chulia does not mean a single ring. It means a series of three rings. Because he quotes from the Gemara Menachot with regards to tzitzit, that a chulia is a reference to three times. And therefore when it says chulia over here, it's a reference to the three rings. And therefore Rashi says, chulia shalosh tabot. Because tabat achat eino gel kisar. It makes the clear point that if we're speaking about a cutout along the side of the trachea, that is the size of a sar, there's no way that could fit into a single tracheal ring. Since it can't fit into a single tracheal ring, therefore it must be that it's on a series of rings. And therefore Rashi says it means comparing a series of three to a series of three rings, because that's what you need in order to compare it, otherwise it won't be the size of an isar. So as long as it's on that same series of three rings, then they are comparable rings for you to see what it looks like. If you do it on another series of three rings, that we wouldn't allow. And then the Gemara says, "Bechilkata, the locha is afilu mechulia lechulia." Not like Rav Papa, but even from one chulia to the other chulia is okay. Umi bar chulia lebar chulia, and the derivative chulia to derivative chulia is okay. Abalo mechulia lebar chulia, abalo bar chulia lechulia. Now Rashi explains over here the bar chulia could be one of two things. The bar chulia could either be the material that is between the cartilaginous rings that are in the trachea, there is between them, there's a thin part, which is the softer tissue of the trachea that sits in between them. So that could be the bar chulia, which is the chulia, is the actual hardened ring. And between the rings is the bar chulia. And Rashi then says that the bar chulia actually could also be the back of the ring. If you remember, we looked this numerous times, that the front of the ring is very thick. And then as you move towards the back, it narrows along the sides, the thickness. And then in the back of the tracheal rings, there's actually no ring. It's not hardened over there. There's just a piece of lining that connects between them. So bar chulia are the areas that are not like the thickness of the rings. So you have to compare something of a similar nature to something of a similar nature. So that means that if you're going to compare chuliot, if the problem is on the front of the tracheal rings, you have to compare the fronts of tracheal rings. If it's on the side of the tracheal ring, you have to compare it to sides because the thickness is different. And if you cut in the front, you're going to get a different view than when you cut on the side. And so you can compare chulia to chulia, which is the same on the front parts of the tracheal rings and on the tracheal rings themselves. You can compare to each other. But you can't compare that to a bar chulia. You can't compare that to the area in between the rings or the area towards the back half of the rings because they're of a different thickness and of a different nature. So you have to compare like items if you want to compare the kaneh. That's what the Gemara says over here. Amar Ze'iri. So Ze'iri says, Halcholet, the rectum, shenikva kshera. If it gets a hole in it, then it is kasher. Ho'el v'arechayim mamidot oto. Because the hips hold up the rectum. So if you look in the anatomy of the animal, the rectum is exiting through the back of the animal, the rear of the animal. And it sits between basically the spinal column of the animal and the tailbone that we spoke about. And then below that, the yerechayim, which are the hip bones, and actually the hip bone itself, is the Rashi calls over here in Rashi calls in Old French, the hankish. So that those hip bones and the tailbone, between them is sitting the rectum. So they give structural support to the rectum. And so that's what he's pointing out, that even if there's a hole in there, it's not going to become a trepha, because there's external structural support to hold up the rectum so that it's functional and doesn't create a trepha, even if there's a hole in it. Vekama, how much can it be cut is one question. The other question is, where along the rectum do we say this? The rectum runs long distance along the back of the animal, and you're telling me the hips hold it up. The hips only start at a certain point. So where is that point where this difference comes up? So he says, Amar Rabbi Eloi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Makom Devek Berubo, Shlomo Makom Devek B'Mashu. So the place where it is attached to the hips, there the amount that you can cut is Ro. In Shlomo Makom Devek, if it's not in the area where the hips are, where they give the structural support, then it's B'Mashu. So Rabbi Yochanan answers both of the questions, which is, first of all, where along the rectum is this true? And number two is, how much of the rectum has to be cut in order for it to be problematic? So the first statement is that the rear half of the rectum, which is from that part of the hip bone to the back where it has strong structural support, that's where we're speaking about that it's not a trepha. And it's not a trepha, even it's cup up to rubo, up to a rove over there, that's okay still. On the other hand, if you are in front of that part of the hip bone where it doesn't have as much structural support, then if it even has a puncture of a mashu, it is problematic. So he gave us, again, along the continuum of the rectum, where it matters and where it doesn't matter. In addition, in the place where it doesn't matter, he's telling you that you need rove in order for it to be a problem. It's not clear here whether rove is okay and only beyond rove is problematic, or is rove already problematic. It's not clear from the statement of Rabbi Yochanan and the Rishonim argue about that. So Amar Rabbanan Kameh de Rabba, Mishmeh de Rab Nachman. So the Rabbanan said this over to Rava in the name of Rav Nachman, Amar Lav Mi Amina Luchu. Didn't I already tell you? Lo Tit Lo Bei Buke Visrike. He says, don't put empty flasks in the mouth of Rav Nachman. They're quoting now in the name of Rav Nachman this information. And Rava, who's a Talmid Muvak of Rav Nachman, says, I always tell you, don't attribute to Rav Nachman things that don't make sense or things that are not real. And that is because, Halchi Amar Rav Nachman, this is what Rav Nachman said, Makom, the big, Afilu Nital Kulo Kasher. Even if the whole thing is gone over there, it is Kasher. V'hush Nishtar Bo Ketet Tefisa. As long as there is a Ketet Tefisa. V'kama, and what does a Ketet Tefisa? Amvaye Kemlo Bata B'Torah. It means a finger's worth, Rashi says, in a Torah, in a shore. So now, I'm going to work backwards through this. First of all, the word Ketet Tefisa, we already saw back on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. Over there we had a machloket between Rashi, the Baal Tosfot, the Bahag, as to what Ketet Tefisa is. Tosfot over there said, don't compare them, because over there it uses Ketet Tefisa Yad. So over there it uses a different terminology. Ketet Tefisa Yad, over here it's Ketet Tefisa. Rashi said there, Keshlosh V'arba Etzbaot, three or four Etzbaot. And then he says, I heard that maybe it means the chodei tzibarnayim, the tips of the fingers. But Rashi clearly thinks over there it's three or four fingers, or at least all the fingers, even if they are held tightly together. But over here, it's just an etzba. While Tosfot says, don't think that over here where it says that it's three or four fingers, that you should apply it back there. Which means over there, it's just an etzba. So over here, it must be different than an etzba. Over here, it must be kishlosh v'arba etzbaot, three or four fingers. So Tosfot thinks that over here, it's three or four fingers. And back of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, he says that there where it says Ketet Tefisa Yad, it's different than the Ketet Tefisa over here. And it's got to be something different. And then he quotes the Bahag and others that say it's a much smaller amount. It's one or two fingers. It's a grasp by the two sides of the hand. Whatever it is over there is definitely smaller than what it is over here. Rashi thinks just in the reverse, which is over here, it's an etzba. Over there, it's got to be three or four etzbaot. And so for Rashi over here, is the amount of an etzba even in a shor gadol. And for Tosfot, it's going to be around three or four etzbaot, even for a shor hagadol. So now that's the first thing. The second thing is, what is exactly the meaning that the hudi shtarbo can take the pisa? Where do you need that amount left that is okay? So that's actually a machloket rishonim. And you can see this in Sikhat Chulin. According to the Rashba, you need to have a piece that's left along the continuum of the rectum before the makom adavek, in that location where it doesn't have the structural support of the hips, meaning towards the front end of the rectum, that's v'mashu. From the makom adavek and onwards, then you need a kedek piece that yad left. Over there, even if there's just a little piece left, it's not at the beginning of it that it's this way, but it means that along that continuum, you need a kedek piece that left. Somewhere along the way, you need a piece of the rectum left in order for it to be okay as a not a treifa. Or in essence, Rav Nachman's really arguing Rav Yochanan's understanding of Ziri. He thinks that Rove has nothing to do with this, that you could actually be missing the entire rectum as long as you have kedek tefisa. And Rove doesn't play in here at all. Rabbeinu Yonah and the Ra'ah think that there are really actually three different places along the way. Before the makom adavek, in the place where it doesn't have the structural support of the hips, then it's b'mashu. From the makom adavek and onwards, then you need a kedek tefisa left. In the place itself where it is date to be sa, even if it's cut for ubo, that's enough to mean not considered a treifa. Beyond that point, where you're along the continuum, beyond that point, even if the whole thing is gone over there, it is kasher. Or in essence, Rav Nachman is qualifying Rabbi Yochanan's statement and saying that the only time that robe is relevant is in the area of kedek to be sa. But beyond that point, you don't even need anything over there. So according to these Rishonim, Rav Nachman is modifying Rabbi Yochanan the Kula rather than arguing on Rabbi Yochanan. It's a machloket, again, whether where you need that piece left over and whether you can have both it be cut for ubo and have that piece that's hanging also suffice to be the circumference of kedek tefisat yad in order for it to be kosher. And the basic idea, again, is that this area has strong structural support and an area that is very tight and compacted because of the bones above, the bones below, and the fat that sits there, that even if the rectum itself is not completely in place, that still the ray of the animal can be passed through there, even with damage to the rectum, and it would not cause it to be a treifa. Right now we move on to the next part of the Mishnah, which is Akaris Hapnimit. In the Mishnah, we saw, and the Gemara is going to discuss this today, that Akaris Hapnimit Shinikva. If it's the internal rumen that has a hole in it, that's a problem. O shnikra rova chitzuna. Or if it's a tear of the majority of what seemingly is the karesa chitzuna, the outer rumen. So you have the inner rumen and the outer rumen, and they have a different din. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda gives a different din, which we'll get to at the end of today's daf as well. Hagdola tefach. The larger part is a tefach. Vaktana biruba. And the smaller one is birov. And we'll see today that it's a reference to the size of the animal. So now what the Gemara is discussing is, how do you know what is the karis hapnimi, and what is the karis achitzona, which has a big nafkamina? Whatever is the inner rumen is a din, that if it's punctured by mashu, it's a trefa. The outer rumen needs a rove to be taken off of it before it is considered to be a trefa. So identifying where the karis hapnimi is significant because it has a huge nafkamina in terms of trefa. So here we're going to have numerous opinions as to what it is. Amrei Yehuda Marav, Heid Natan Bar Shila, Reish Tabachaya Ditzipori. Natan Bar Shila, he was the head butcher of Tzipori, gave evidence or testimony, Lifnei Rabbi, this was done in front of Rabbi, Mishom Rabbi Natan, in the name of Rabbi Natan, Ezu Kares Hapnimi. What is considered to be the inner rumen? Sanya Dibe. That's what he thinks it is. Sanya is a word that's easy to translate, which is that it's the hated part. It is something that is disliked or in disfavor. Dibe, it's not clear here what it is. Rashi gives two explanations for it. He says, Krastia bodil lashon mori. That's what I have from my Rebbe. Behua soy kikis. It is like a pouch. Visatum birosho. And it's sealed at its top. Lashon sanya dibe, the fish hu makom maus v'kachush. It is something that is disgusting and weak. Va'afilu l'ze'evim, even for the wolves. Choshara kares karoi chitzon. And the remainder of the kares is considered to be the kares ha-chitzon. V'shiro biro. The truth is that what's being described here isn't even a part of the rumen itself, but rather it's a part of the intestines, which I'll explain in one second. Lishna Achrina, another version of this, Shemati Mina Pancha Atzma. It's from the room in itself, that Makom Shemnakvim Shama Tabachim, the place where the butchers puncture Omotzima Perish, and they take out the stuff that's left in the room in, and it's Makom Shesanoi, Zab. It's that which you don't want flows out of. That's why it's called Sanandive, by Rishon Nira. And he says, I think the first one makes more sense. Rashi over here gives actually two explanations for what this Sanya Dibi is. So Rashi's first explanation, which he favors, is something what's called the Sikkum. The Sikkum is a part or a sac that sits between the small intestine and the large intestine, and it receives the fecal material from the small bowel. It's also the area where the appendix is attached. So it's this sac that sits in between. It's an intraperitoneal pouch that is considered to be the beginning of the large intestine. It would be something that's far away from the actual rumen itself, because the rumen itself goes into the other parts of the digestive system, then eventually into the small intestines. Then from the small intestines to the large intestines, the cecum is much further along. Now the truth is that they might sit next to each other physically because of the way the intestines work. The intestines are wrapped around and circle around, and the carus, the rumen itself, is very large. So the cecum and the rumen might look like they're actually attached or nearby each other, even though along the digestive system, they're not so close to each other. The rumen's at the beginning of the digestive system, and the cecum is all the way towards the end of the digestive system. So that's the one suggestion of Rashi, and that's what he favors. The second suggestion, he says, is even within the rumen itself. The rumen itself is very large, and on the opposite end of where the food enters into the rumen from the esophagus, he says that there are these two small bumps or pouches that are found there, and the butchers, when they want to empty out the rumen, after they check the animal and they want to clean it up, the way they empty all the leftover food that's inside of the rumen that the cow ate before it was shefted, they slice those two pouches at the back of the rumen, and that's called the keres hapnimi. So those are the two options as to what Rashi says this sanya de dive is, and Rashi favors that first interpretation. Rabbi Shmuel Amar, Rabbi Shmuel now says, istomka de karso. It is, and Rashi says over istomka, anishamati, I heard istomka balas. So he just translates the word from the Gemara into las, and sure enough, it's the same word. And that's because it's a Greek word. Istomka sounds like what we have today, which is the stomach. But Rashi says, ve'eni yodamau. He says, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's referencing to. There's some who suggest that istomka means the entranceway, or the area at the beginning of the karis. Or the other opinion that's brought by the Sikhat Chulin is that the istomka is the pia keba. It's the entranceway or the opening of the keba. Ravasi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Makom Tsar Yesh Bakaris. There's an area of the rumen that is narrow. And where the rumen narrows, that's where it's considered to be the keres apnimi. Ve'eni yodeya izu. And I don't know exactly where that is. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzhak, Nafal Karsa Bebira. So he kind of makes a joke about it, but he says, we got the rumen fell in the pit, or the rumen fell into the cistern. Because you come with a memra, but you don't explain the memra, and so now it's not meaningful. You brought us some information about the rumen, but you say I don't know what it is, and therefore it's not helpful. So Amar Rabacha Bar Aza, Amar Ravasi, Mina Meitzar Ulamato. So then here we have a clarification of what that means. It means from the part that narrows downward, which means that the way that the rumen sits, the rumen is fairly large, and it sits a portion of it inside of the rib cage, and it narrows towards the front of the animal. As it reaches towards the esophagus, it narrows. And that part in the back, which is extends towards the higher end of the animal and beyond the ribs itself as well, that's considered to be the keres achitzona. So somewhere along the way there, the rumen starts to narrow. Where it starts to narrow towards the front of the animal, that is classified as the keres apnimi. And then anything beyond that in the animal, towards the hind of the animal, is called the keres achitzona. So here's our third opinion as to what the difference between pnimi and chitzona is. Rabbi Yaakov bar Nachmani bar Shmuel, makom shein bo meilat. It's a place where there is no hair-like lining in the rumen. We already discussed this before, that there are these villous protrusions that come out of the wall of the rumen, and they're actually called papillae, and they are to help with the absorption of whatever the rumen is taking into the body. So he says that there are certain sections of the rumen that don't have these papillae on them. And that's the area that's considered to be the makom apnimi. And in Sikhat Kulin, if you look at the depiction that he puts there, that is on the upper half of the rumen. And Rashi gives a description of what he's discussing, and he says, it is the hair-like structures that are inside that you take off with hot water when you boil it to take them off. That part where it isn't found on the karis, that's called the karis apnimi. Or the other opinion that's brought by the Sikhat Chulin, Shemo Milad, is the area where it first enters into the rumen. Rabbi Avina, Amar Gneva Mishmei the Rav, Tefach Beveshet, Samuch the Karis, Zoe Karis Apnimi. The Tefach, the one Tefach in the esophagus, as it approaches the rumen, that's considered to be the Karis Apnimi. In that way, it would be the last Tefach of the Veshet itself that we call the Karis Apnimi. Based on the way the Gemara back on Mem Daled Amud Aleph emended this statement, it actually would be the first tefach into the karis, into the rumen, and where the esophagus enters, that first tefach of the entry in the rumen, that's considered the karis apnimi. That's what we said in the Gemara back on Daf Mem Daled. Amrei b'marova, mishmei the Rabbi Yosi bar b'chanina. So in Eretz Yisrael, they say, kol hakaris kulo, zoi karis apnimit. The entire rumen is considered to be the karis apnimi. And then he says, punctured by mashu, it'll be problematic. Bezu karis achitzon. If that's all karis apnimi, what's the karis achitzon? Basaro chufet roba karis. That is the flesh in the underbelly of the animal that covers the roba karis, that covers the majority of the rumen. So the underbelly of the animal extends, obviously, all the way from the front of the animal, the neck of the animal, all the way to the hind legs of the animal. Along that, a large section of it is actually underneath the rumen. So that part that is underneath the rumen, you would measure that part that was directly under the rumen. If a robe of that is missing, of that lining is missing, then it is a trefa. And that's what's considered to be the karis ha-chitzona, not because it is the karis, but because it's external to the karis, but it is opposite the rumen along that whole section. Rabba bar Rav Huna amar, mafrato. It's from the exposure. My mafrato. That's where the butchers open it up and expose the animal. So here he gives a different definition as to what the karis apnimi is, which is that when you hang the animal up to flay it, you hang it upside down by its hind legs, and then the body of the animal is facing you. Then you slice open the animal to get the innards out. When you slice down the middle to get the innards out, that part of the rumen that is facing the tabach, that's facing the butcher towards the bottom, that's considered to be the area of the karis ha-pnimi. Which Rashi describes over here is tzad ha-karis aru'et ha-karka. It is the area of the karis that is mifarat, that's exposed, meaning that it looks at the ground and is visible immediately when you open up the animal, to take out the innards. That's the place where the tabachim cut open. So when the animal's alive and it's walking, it's the part of the karis, part of the rumen that faces the karka, faces the ground. When the animal is hung up to be flayed and have the innards taken out, it's facing you upside down. If you slice the belly, when the belly first opens up, that part of the rumen that you're looking at, that's the part of the rumen that faces the ground. That's the part of the rumen that is the karis ha-pnimi. Binardo avde karabo bar Rav Huna. In Narado, they practice like Rabbi Bar Huna. Amalei Rav Ashi la Meimar. So Rav Ashi says to a Meimar, who is from Narado, Kohari Shmaitita Amai. What do you do with all the other opinions? Why did Narada, are you only following Rabbi Bar Rav Huna? Why don't you account for all these different opinions about Karis Apnimi, which have significant ramifications because it is a trefa of a mashu on the Karis Apnimi? Amalei Kulu Shaykhin with Rabbi Bar Rav Huna. They are all subsumed under the shita of Rabba Bar Rav Huna. And that is because, Rashi says, Sanya Dibi, Histomka Makom Shein Bo Milat, Kulan Bo Oton Tzad Umdim. They all are on that side that is exposed when you open up the animal. Olamala, Olamata, above or below. Chitarvet La Lachoto Tzad Ben Nekev Mashu. And if you then say the entire part of the karis that is facing the karka, that is exposed when you open up the animal, if you say all that is karis of Nimi, Nimso mekayemet lekulo. You are successful at incorporating all of the opinions that we said above. And in Sichat Chulin, he depicts to you how all of these different opinions, whether it's the Sanya Dibi, the first or second explanation in Rashi, as to what it is, it faces out the animal, and that would be captured as the Koris Apnimi, as well as the fact that if it's the Pia Keva, it's on that same side. If it's from the Meitzar Lamato, again, it's the area that you would see where it narrows that part over there. Although it's not clear to me how the Mokum Shembo Milat, which seems to be on the top of the rumen, when the animal's hanging, it seems to be on the opposite side, how that exactly fits in with Rabba bar Rav Huna. Although the Sichat Chulin explains that if you think that the Mokum Shembo Milat is either in the area where it first enters into the rumen, or it's on the upper half of the rumen, then that is a Mokum Ore the Karka, meaning that when you look the Karis, if it was split open, that top of the chorus would face the ground and would be visible. So that's a way to include it. But then that would be a much looser definition of what Makom Arei HaKarka is, because it's not just the stuff that's absolutely visible, but it's any area that sees the Karka, and up from there is considered to be the chorus Pnimi. Amalei, he said to him, but is that really true? Udravasi Amrab Yochanan Mai. What about Ravasi Amrab Yochanan, which we didn't know what it was? So Amalei, Farpersha Ravacha Barava. That we handled already. Kravaka Rava came along and explained to us what it was. It's the area of the karis where it starts to narrow towards the front of the animal. Ude Rabbi Avina, Ude Be'arova Mai. What about the view of Rabbi Avina, which was that it is Tefach Samuch LeVeshet, which again is up towards the Veshet, either in the esophagus itself or the beginning of the rumen, which isn't in the place that faces the karka of the rumen. Ude B'nei Marova, and the B'nai Marova that see in the name of Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, that it's all Karis, is considered to be the Karis Apnimi, Mai, how are they included? They definitely argue. And as Rashi pointed out already, by the B'nai Marova that say in the name of Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, that it's all Karis, is considered to be the Karis Apnimi, first of all, clearly that argues. In addition, this opinion doesn't say that the Karis Apnimi and Chitzon are both about the rumen. They say that the Karis Apnimi is the rumen, and then the basar chofer rov hakaris, that's the karis achitzonah, which isn't the rumen itself. So they're different than all the other opinions before. So they definitely argue on Rabba bar Rav Huna, as well as Rabbi Avina, in the name of Gneva Mishum Rav, that a tefak vevesh samud the karis is the karis apnimit, that also argues on this Rabba bar Rav Huna. But if you use Rabba bar Rav Huna, you capture his opinion, as well as the three first opinions that we saw of Sanya Dibei Stomka, and Makom She'embo Milat, as well as the statement of Ravacha that defined Ravasi in the name of Yochanan, that means a Meitzar Lamata is also included. All of those are subsumed under Parata. And now Rashi brings the Halacha. The Keiva and the Lo Ifsik Hilchata. Since we don't have a Psak Halacha over here, we have them practicing Rabba Rav Huna, but you still have a Machloke with the B'nai Marova and Rabbi Avina. So Avina and the Chumra. Therefore we go the Chumra. With Tarfina and B'chol HaKaris, Benekev Mashu Gmnei Marova. Therefore, we're Koshesh Gmnei Marova, who say the entire rumen has a din of Karis Apnimi, and we're Poso, are making it to a Treifa, if there's any hole of a Mashu in that area. Umiu, Kohanach Treifot, Anan Lotarchina, the Mivtake Batrayu. But, given all this information, we don't go looking for these Treifa when we open up the animal. Bechol Kama Delo Mishtakchan, Azlin Bataruba. Because as long as you don't find a problem, we go but the rove animals, and rove animals don't have a treifa in them. So we're not going to make him go check the entire rumen to see if there's any hole in it. We're going to assume that the rumen doesn't have a hole in it because the majority of animals don't have a hole in it. Now, if you find a hole, then you have to discuss, when did it happen? Is it a hole that makes it into a treifa? But without that evidence, we're just going to assume we go but the rove. But Rashi makes one exception. When it comes to the fibrous attachments to the lungs, where it's either attached to the side, it has growths on it, there, mishum deshchichan but kanem b'itrayu. Since it's so common and so frequent, we check it. So he says there, by the lungs, you don't have a chazaka. By the other treifot, you have a chazaka that the animal is kasher, unless you get evidence to the contrary. On the other hand, when it comes to the lungs, it's the other way around. It is considered to be problematic until it's checked, because there is a heavy chazaka that animals have these problems in there, and therefore each one has to be checked. And that's why we check the lungs in terms of treifa, whereas we don't check many of the other treifa that are found that we've discussed all along, is because the other treifa have a chazaka of kashrut, whereas the reya has a chezkat problems that are significant enough that you can't claim that it's a chazaka of kashrut, and therefore you have to check the lungs for the problems that we have mentioned until now. Right now we go on to Rabbi Yehuda Amar Bigdola. He differentiated between a big animal and a small animal. Amar Rabbi Binyam and Bar Yefet. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Lo Gdola Gdola Mamash. We say a big animal, we don't literally mean a big animal. Lo Ktana Ktana Mamash. When we say that it's a small animal, we don't literally mean it's a small animal. Ella, kosha nikra ba tefach, velo avi ruba, zoi shishaninu, big dola. Anyone where the underbelly is cut by a tefach, and it's not the rove of the underbelly of the animal, zoi shishaninu, big dola. That's an animal that is determined by gdola. That's what we say, but the larger animal, then a tefach is enough to make it into a trefa. So over there, if you cut a tefach, and that's not the rove of the underbelly of the animal, over there it'll suffice to be a tefach in order for it to be problematic. Ruba, velovi tefach, if you have an animal where the rove is not equal to a tefach, zoh shishaninu biktana beruba. And that's what we meant, that when it's a small animal, then you go by rove. So basically, it is the smaller of rove or tefach. Whichever one of those is relevant over here, then that will be the determination of what makes it into a trefa. So in an animal where, if you had a rove, it wouldn't be a tefach, then rove governs. If it's an animal where rove would be larger than a tefach, then tefach governs. And that's what makes it into a trefa. Over here, Rabbi Yehuda is describing, so gdola and ktana, and that question of the karesa chitzona, how much needs to be ripped or problematic in order for it to be a trefa, is relative to the size of the animal. Again, it's a maximum of a tefach. It could be something less than a tefach, but that equals up to a rove. Again, we described it with regards to the opinion that kares achitzona is the basar chofet kares. That's what we described, but obviously the other opinions of what kares achitzona is, you'd have to apply it equally to any one of those opinions as what the kares achitzona is. Where it says, ruba velobi tefach pshita. Of course, if an animal has the rove of its underbelly cut or split, and it hasn't reached the level of a tefach, it's poshut that that should be a trefa. Well, you can expect it to be a tefach. The animal doesn't have a tefach to be there. You have to open up the entire animal before it's a trefa. When it doesn't have a tefach there, of course it makes sense to say that it's a rove. Lo tzricha, davia tefach umashu. It was a situation in which it was a tefach and a little more. So Rashi over here explains that if you went a mashu more than a rove, it would actually equal up to a tefach. So Rashi says, we would have a havamina, that since if you went just a drop more, it would reach a tefach, then we require a tefach, even though rove happens a mashu before a tefach. That's the havamina. And the kamash malan is, you don't need that to be a trefa. Even a rove is a trefa, even though it could be a little more, it would reach the tefach. That's why Rashi means it. The Baal Tosfos would say, there's no logic in that. Why would you think, if you have a rove already cut, that you have to go a little more to get to a tefach? What's significant about a tefach versus a rove that would make you think you should do a tefach and not a rove? So instead, the Baal Tosfos suggests over here that Rabbeinu Chananel Garis, Deika Tefach Umashu. The case is a case where the animal's underbelly is a tefach and a little more. And the question is, what do you need then? If it's under a tefach, no question that rove is what's got to govern over here. But what happens if the underbelly is a tefach and a little more? And as a tefach and a little more, what do you need now in order for it to be a trefa? Do you need a tefach? Because there is a tefach there. Or is a rove enough? And that's what he says the Havamina of the Gemara was. The Havamina of the Gemara was that if you had more than a tefach, then you would have to get to a tefach, even though that was way beyond the rove. So Adamikra ba tefach, lo bi trefa, kamash malan, that rove is enough, even when the underbelly or the area that would make it into a trefa is the size of more than a tefach. You still, a rove is enough to make it a trefa. You don't have to get all the way to a tefach, kamash malan. Amar Ganeva, Amar Rabbi Yassi, Niktara Kesela. If it's punctured like the size of a sela, as Rashi says here, a sela is a larger coin. We're not talking about an isar, which is a much smaller coin. Here we're speaking about a sela, which is a significant sized coin, trefa. It's considered to be a trefa, shem timtach tamod al tefach. Because if you stretch it out, it will come to the size of a tefach. So this is the reverse of what we had before, which is that in the trachea, if you had a problem that was along a narrow strip, if you then made that into a circle and it was the size of an isar, then it would be a trefa. So there we were taking long strips and then consolidating them into a circle and saying that it would be a problem. Over here we're doing the opposite. If you have a wound, an area that's opened up that's the size of a sela, and if you stretched it out, it would equal a tefach of that part, then that is also a trefa. So So even though it's consolidated in a single area, in a circular area like a cella, nevertheless, if you stretched it out, it would be a cut that ran a tefach, which Tosfot describes as being a circumference of a tefach, which means that you'd be speaking about a cella that has a diameter with an estimation of pi is 3, would be about a third of a tefach. That would make you into a trefa. He explained me this information along the bridge over the river in Narda. The kasela kshera, if it's the size of a cell, it's kshera. Yet there me kasela trefa. If it's beyond a cell, greater than a cell, it's a trefa. So before we had nikra kisela. It's torn like a cell, it's a trefa. And along comes Rabbi Chir Ba'ava and says, I heard this explanation from Gneva directly, and he told me that if it was the size of a cella, it was still okay. It's only if it's beyond a cella that's a trefa. The comment yet there's the cella. That's a amorphous term. Cella is a certain size, more than a cella. How much more than a cella do you need for it to be a trefa? I'm Rabbi Yosef going to Island Tlat Kishyata Bitsipa Biduchaka below Tsipa Baravka. It's a wound or a cut in which you can fit in 3 date pits with some of the residual date on them. If 3 of them could, when you take off a date, there's some residual of the flesh of the date that stays on the pit. If you have 3 of those, the flesh on it still, you could press 3 of them in. Below Tzipa, if it doesn't have that flesh left over on the pit, then you can get 3 of them in without any problem. That's the size that we're speaking about here. That's the measurement that would be greater than a cella that would make it into a trefa that Rabbi Chir Ba'ava says he got from Gneva. Okay, we're going to stop here by the 2 dots towards the bottom of Nun Amud Bet.